Angela York has served as the executive director of Thrive for the last 7 years here on the peninsula. And I think I remember when she became that. And under her leadership, it has grown to serve, can you believe, over 12,000 individuals per year. That's a city, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot of people. Providing food pantry services that we're aware of, emergency financial assistance, and financial coaching, which is also important. Angela developed a strong desire to do nonprofit work while she was in college after going on a 7-week mission to Cairo, Egypt, where her team helped teach English to Sudanese refugees. This experience inspired her to dedicate her career to creating a better future for the world through nonprofit work. She holds a master's degree in community leadership and a bachelor's degree in public relations. Outside of working at Thrive, Angela enjoys spending time with her husband and son, watching the Philadelphia Eagles play, and doing activities with her book club. So Angela, we welcome you today. We're happy to greet you with food for the food pantry you head up, and we salute you for your work and want to learn from you today.
Good morning, everybody. That was a nicer introduction than the last church I was at. I actually came here from a different church, and the pastor just openly heckled me for being an Eagles fan. Oh. It was very rude. No. It's a football team. We're doing quite well. I saw that. Okay. So I'm Angela York. I'm the executive director of Thrive. I know many of you probably know everything about Thrive. But my goal today is just to give you a little bit more detail about how we do our service, what needs we're seeing, what's coming up next. Less of a message of challenging you, and more just educating you and letting you know what the updates are and what's happening. So first, I want to say how thankful we are for all of you all for being so generous and supportive of us over the years. From the food collection this morning. I mean, there's a lot of food here, and there's so few of you, and I'm like, wow, it's great that you all do this for us every year. And especially the fact that you're now, this year, you're doing it earlier is even more helpful, because the majority of our donations, food, monetary, come in between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And so this is kind of a gap period where we're excited about receiving a lot of donations, but they're not here yet, and we're serving an incredible amount of people. So getting these donations in early is really filling a need for us. So thank you. So I know you all have been extremely supportive otherwise, and for a long time. And you all are one of 80 congregations who are supporters of us, but one of the earliest supporters. Which is really meaningful for us. So a little bit about who we are. Snooki did ask me to say a few background things for anyone who might not be aware. But we used to be called DUCO. We were established in 1973. We have 80 church partners across the peninsula of different denominations and backgrounds. And through those congregations, we source things like food, volunteers, and then financial contributions. We also go out in the community and try to fundraise individually. So we're leveraging funds that churches donate so that we can get grants, get individual donations, fundraisers, and things like that, just so we can multiply what we're doing out in the community. And that's really been the reason that we've been able to grow so much over the past 7 years, is just reaching out and saying, there's companies out there. There's other spaces that we can get more funds, because the need is incredibly high. It's always been high. We've always served, a percentage of people who've asked us for especially financial assistance. But right now it's just bigger than I've seen it. So, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But our main programs are, we offer emergency financial assistance for families who get behind in a critical bill. So these are people who are living paycheck to paycheck. These are working Virginia Peninsula residents. So they have income, they get behind because they have a medical expense that they can't afford. Their car breaks down. They get sick. They have to be off work for a few weeks, and they just can't afford to cover that gap. And so we're providing kind of gap coverage to be able to keep families housed. Because once they lose their space, they become evicted. It becomes so much more difficult to find new housing because the eviction's on your record. Your credit score takes a dive. Your new landlord does a credit check. They probably won't want to rent to you. And you couldn't afford your last rent, and now you have to come up with a deposit and your first month's rent. And that is very, very difficult for the families we serve. And so the most preventative thing that we can do is just to keep them in their house. And so that's where we come in and we provide that emergency financial assistance, pay the landlord, so that we can keep them in their home. And we do all the checks to make sure that, to verify their need, to make sure that our money is going to keep them housed. We do all those things because if I'm going to help somebody with up to $1,000 toward their rent, I want to know that this is going to keep them housed and that they have a plan for next month. And so that's where the financial coaching comes in, because each family comes in and sits down with one of our financial coaches. Our financial coaches are all volunteers, and they're trained through the Virginia Cooperative Extension Office. So if you're familiar with the Master Gardeners, you can also become a Master Financial Educator volunteer. It's a 20-hour course, and anyone is welcome to take this course. Any one of you. Yes, I'm looking at you. We're going to do a course again in February, and you'll be in a class of hopefully between 10 and 15 people who take the course. And then after that, the volunteers shadow our current coaches. They are shadowed, and then we kind of release them to the families. We set up all the appointments for you. Say your appointment time every week is Tuesday at 10. You show up Tuesday at 10, you have somebody meeting here with you because the staff has done the work to make that connection already. And then our goal is to help these families to continue to come back. So after that first meeting and we help them with their emergency bill, we actually have a new program, and it's called Level Up. And Level Up means that they can come back, and we can work with them to help them to reach financial milestones. So a financial milestone for families who are living paycheck to paycheck could be starting to have an emergency savings account. We know that 40% of Americans do not have $500 in the bank. So if they are sick, they have to rely on friends, family, somebody like Thrive to help them through that emergency. And so one of my big goals is to help families build a $500 emergency savings account. They can also pay off debt. If they lower their monthly expenses, these are all small and large milestones. And then we can gift them with actually rewards. So we got a grant from PB Mayors. And so if they reach a milestone, we can give them a gift card. We can give them tickets to Busch Gardens. We can give them tickets to the movies. And it all depends on the level of their milestone. But we want to make this fun and encouraging for people. Because when you're behind financially, it's hard to look at your finances. It's hard to do that work because it can feel not very hopeful. And so we want to try to make it fun for people to reach milestones. And our coaches take a coaching approach, which means that we are looking to the families we serve to come up with solutions. So I'm not just walking in and telling you what you should do with your money, because you're not really going to appreciate that. And it's probably not going to go well. So my goal is to, and I'm not a coach, but if I was a coach, I would be laying out your finances, kind of a come to Jesus moment, if you will. And then asking them what solutions they see. Do they see ways they can trim their budget? Do they see ways that they can bring on new income? Because if they come up with a solution, they're more likely to follow through. And it can be a more hopeful session than kind of advice giving, which is what we want to avoid. So that's our strategy with financial coaching. Let me know if you're interested. Of course, the other side of the house is the food pantry. And the food pantry is, we actually have a number of folks in this congregation volunteering, which is really exciting. We have 100 weekly volunteers who do the work at Thrive, and most of them are in the food pantry. So our food pantry takes calls for people who want to come for food assistance, or folks can request help online. Either way, no matter how they come to us, the first thing that we do is we get a food profile from them. This is new because of COVID. So pre-COVID, the families can actually walk in the building and pick out all their own food like a grocery store. But since our space is small, I felt like this was not the right time to do this. So we kind of changed. So now we ask them to fill out a profile. So they can do this online. And what it is they reserve their appointment and they check the boxes of all the foods that they eat. And we keep this on file. It prints out in this really pretty little one-page thing that we keep on file. And it says, I eat green beans, but I don't eat corn. We want this kind of cereal. We don't eat this. And the idea is that when somebody packs that food, like Evangeline, right? So she'll get the food profile and she will pack food based on this profile. And the idea is that if you donate corn and this family doesn't eat corn, we don't give them corn, right? We give them the foods that they eat. This is more dignifying for these families, but it also helps us to make sure that resources are going in the right places, that we're not wasting things. And so that is how we do all of the food right now. It's all curbside pickup. We're serving about 25 families a day. And families call at 10 o'clock. And when they call, we give them a pickup time. So they're not waiting in line outside our door. Your appointment's at 3 o'clock. You show up at 3. You call and say, hey, I'm here. We bring the food out, you leave. It is very, very, very fast. It also allows families to be private. If this is their first time coming for food assistance, it can be very embarrassing for folks who haven't had to ask for help before. We know that between 30 and 35% of these families have never come to us before. We get referrals from a lot of the big hotlines. So I suspect probably, 15 to 20% of them have never been to a food pantry before, ever. They come to us first. And so we want to make sure this is an experience that they're willing to go back to. We don't want them to be hungry at home. We want them to come in and get the food that they need. And that's just part of our strategy to make it a dignifying experience for them. So anyway, they call at 10. They can do the request online. We take 25 families. Every day around 10:15, we're booked up for the whole day. So anyone who calls after that, we have to tell them, they have to call tomorrow because that is how much need we're seeing. In August, we served 509 families in a single month. That is the most we've served in our entire history in a single month. And last August in 2021, we served 270 families. We're actually on track to distribute 90% more food than last year. This is not because I'm going out in neighborhoods and finding people who need food. These are people who are calling us and asking for food at our doorstep, and we're trying to help them. So it's really been pretty significant in the shift. On Friday, we did something different. So normally on Fridays, we take calls like we do every day. We try to take as many families as we possibly can based on how much food we have, how many volunteers we have. And usually at like 10:15, we're done. So my staff said, let's try something different. We have some extra fresh food this week. And so we said, okay, great. So we took every family that called us after 10:15 and told them they can come at 1 o'clock for a distribution that would be held outside. So we did a few shelf stable goods, and then we put all of our fresh food outside. And we served 15 extra families. Now, keep in mind, we only served 25 in a day. And we had 15 extra people call, 15 extra families call to get food that day. That is a shocking amount of people. So we're going to try to continue to do that. But it depends on how much food we get in. It depends on, the weather, frankly, and volunteers and things like that. But just know that we're doing everything we possibly can to add volunteer shifts. We're picking up at more grocery stores. We now pick up at Food Lion 6 days a week. We pick up at Starbucks 3 days a week. We pick up at World Market once a month. So these are all places that have food, and we are assigned to their store by the food bank. And so we go and rescue food. So we'll take, they have too many oranges, or they have deli meats and deli foods that were dated yesterday or whatever it is, but they're still safe to consume. So we get a lot of food through food rescue, and we've been adding as many stores as possible. We also go to the food bank to refill our stock. Most people don't know, but y'all probably do because you're so informed about what we do. But the food bank acts as a parent organization for food pantries. And so we rely on them. We go there, restock food. We pay a very minimal fee to get the food. And it's a way for all the food pantries to be able to have enough. And so we actually go there 4 days a week to get more food. But they are very, very, very low on food right now too. So that's why, you know, donations like yours are so important right now, because it's like, I can't get enough food from my normal sources to keep up with everything. So yeah, I really appreciate you all doing this for us. It's great. And I think part of the reason that we're seeing the needs spike so heavily right now is probably the same reason that you're paying more at the grocery store. Everyone's costs are going up right now. You know, gas thankfully is coming down a little bit. But the cost of groceries is just sky high. And the other part of it that most of us probably don't think about if we're not renters, is that the cost of renting has gone up exponentially for families. So again, we're working with families who are living paycheck to paycheck. Their rent was formerly $900. Well, guess what? Their lease is up. And now their landlord wants $1,100 because there's a line of people behind them who want that apartment, and they will find somebody else to live there. And so it is very, very, very common for rents to be going up, you know, 30%, 20% in the last year. And so when your basic costs, things that you have to buy, you have to spend money on, go up so significantly, it just creates a big stretch for you in your budget. I was mentioning earlier that one of the things that people don't understand about why is there such a crisis? You can see everyone's hiring, right? And there's endless jobs where you can go work at a fast food joint for $13 an hour, and it's not going to feed your family because it's not enough to even cover your rent. And so I think that's kind of a misnomer right now. There's a lot of low-paying jobs available, but you have to make $20 an hour to support a family anymore. It's just the reality of it. I forget, I did the math for how much money you actually make when you make $15 an hour, because that sounds like a lot of money. It's really like $30,000 a year before taxes, and that's not a lot to live on. So I think that's why we're seeing the spike. But what is next for us, which I'm very excited to share, is that we are in the middle of purchasing a new building that we can move into. So, you know, talk about food, why the need is so high, talk about, you know, how we're trying to do more. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to do more when you're in a small space. At some point, you just need more space for more food. So we have decided, so we put an offer on a building. It's been accepted. We're hoping we have to close by contract by the end of the year. We're going to be moving to Nettles Drive. So it's 2.6 miles from our current space. Should be very accessible to people. We have two bus stops, actually literally two bus stops out front. That is right at the end of our drive, so it will still be accessible to people by bus. For those people who currently walk to us, the bus stop is right out front of our space, and it's a direct line to our new building. So that part will be easy. We have been partnering with DoorDash recently. DoorDash has been delivering food on our behalf for us for free. And so I'm hopeful that when we move, that we can just, you know, continue to bump up that relationship, which they're willing to do it. We just don't have the capacity at the moment because of all the things I mentioned. But in our new space, space will no longer be an issue. So hopefully we can do more DoorDashing to families, more deliveries. And so we'll be able to meet the need of the people who walked to us. But our current space is about 2,500 square feet. Our new building of our space will be about 5,700 square feet. So more than twice as much. We will have the ability to bring food in through a double door. So right now, if we get a pallet delivery, okay, the pallet is dropped on our back doorstep and we have to hand unload it and bring items in. It takes an incredible amount of time. But in our new space, we'll actually have the ability to get a pallet jack, pick up the food and bring it inside. It's going to be amazing. what we want to do in the new building is really exciting, and it's kind of unique. So I've talked about the fact that people come to us who probably are coming to us for the first time of going anywhere. And I've had lots of conversations with clients who say the same thing. We know statistically that about 60% of food insecure families will not go to a food pantry. because fear, dignity, pride, all the reasons why you wouldn't want to do that. But increasingly, we're seeing that people do need to get more food. And they're just not, being food insecure means you can't afford all the healthy food you need. It means you're, you know, maybe you're buying canned goods instead of fresh vegetables because you can't afford it. So you're not able to fully nourish yourself and your children. So that's what it means to be food insecure. So we want to attract these families to this new building. And we're going to do that by creating a marketplace atmosphere. So I've talked to Food Lion. They're going to donate the shelving. You're going to walk in and it's going to feel like a grocery store. It will look like a marketplace. Families will get a grocery cart. They'll be able to walk in again, pick out all their own food, and then they'll be able to check out and leave, except for the food is free. And we're going to call it the marketplace, or the market at Thrive Peninsula. And the idea is to take the stigma away and allow families to come in and get the food that they need. We're going to be raising money for this building. So we're going to be doing a capital campaign. We've already gotten our first grant from Centera, who's also provided money for us to stock it with more fresh produce. We already buy milk and eggs for all the families, but we'll be able to continue to do that at a higher level. But the goal here is the market is going to be dignifying, and it's going to have a lot of fresh foods for people and meats so that we can fully nourish them. The other super cool thing is that when you walk in the building, there's going to be glass right in front of you because they have a courtyard that's currently a basketball court. And we're going to turn that into raised garden beds. So we will, it's actually a very large space. So we'll be able to grow fresh produce on site that we can give to the families. And I'd love to do it year round. I mean, there's a push right now from the food bank to do culturally appropriate foods. So we're going to be doing things like collards and things that we frankly just typically don't have. So I'm hoping that we can also use that effort to grow other things that families in this region really want to eat. The other very cool thing about the building is that when you walk in the door, there's going to be a free bookstore. So on Southside, there's a nonprofit, it's called Reach Reads. And the goal of Reach Reads is to get literature in the hands of young people, because we know that if you're low income, your children statistically are more likely to struggle with reading and literacy. And so through this partnership, we're going to have free new books in our library in the lobby that'll be free for the kids to pick out when they come in and visit. Currently, we do free books, but they're donated books. They're, quality sometimes. And we just don't have that many of them. So this is going to be, above and beyond. And it's really going to look like a little bookstore for the kids to come in and get books. So I am super excited about that. We also, through the food bank, are going to get a box truck, a refrigerated box truck with a lift. So that's going to increase our capacity for food. We're going to be hopefully embarking on this, closing by the end of the year. We'll be having renovations done to the building. We're hoping to have churches and other groups adopt spaces within the building so that we can save funds and renovate the building, which is exactly what we did in our current space. And then hopefully we'll be able to move in by late spring and just have the higher capacity to serve more people. We're very much at the beginning of raising money for this. But I'm hoping that we can, just make a lot of progress in reaching out to the community and hoping that people will come alongside us, because this is such a needed thing at the moment. The side of the house that I didn't talk a lot about this morning, which will also be available in this building but doesn't take up as much space, is the emergency financial assistance that we do. I forgot to mention this. I talked a lot about the need for food, that we're going to serve 90% more folks this year. Financial assistance has been a huge need as well for us. So we take applications, people can apply online, they can apply by phone for this service. So far this year, we've received over 4,000 applications for financial assistance. Last year, for the whole year, we received about 3,000 applications. So that shows you something. This year, we've distributed more financial assistance than ever in our history. So we've distributed almost $450,000. And that goes to landlords, it goes to utility companies. And yet we are only meeting about 10% of the need. So it's just amazing to me how many people are struggling right now. And it's hard because I think for many people, if you all watch the news, right, the news has been talking about the need for 2 years. And I've always kind of sat back and been like, this is really interesting. I'm not seeing this. I'm not seeing the need that they're talking about. You know, it's like they went out and found every food bank line and did like this little close up. It's look at all these people who need help. And I'm not trying to downplay new people needed help, but there was also government assistance programs and things to lift people up. Now that those programs are gone and we have inflation, the need I'm seeing is now. And I've been really intentional about not, you know, banging the drum for the past 2 years because I never really thought we were seeing anything yet. And now we're seeing it. So the time is right for us to move. And I'm super excited about it. And I welcome all of you that you are welcome to take a tour of the new building. So the building is currently owned by the Boys and Girls Club, and they have allowed us to go in and provide tours, which we're going to start doing on a weekly basis for people to see the space, kind of pre-construction, to get an idea of what we're walking into. So if anyone's interested, please let me know. I'll be here after the service. You can email me later. I'm happy to give you a tour. The Boys and Girls Club are actually going to remain inside the building with us. So they're going to lease back about 30% of the building, and that'll be controllable revenue for us coming in. And then our current building, which we own, we're going to lease that out as well. So the goal is to obviously be able to do more in the community. And so I'm hoping through these revenue streams, we can keep building what we're growing right now. So I don't have I can make a call to action. I'm the preacher today. If you're interested in getting involved by volunteering, by taking a tour, by learning more about our capital campaign, please let me know. It's been really exciting to see how people have come around us over the last 2 years. You know, we've grown so much, and it's really just because people have stepped up and taken action and said, you know, I care about this. I want to help people. And that's all of you. So just incredibly thankful for your support. And if you have any questions about Thrive, you know, I'm happy to talk to you after. And I think that's it. Go ahead. Oh, yes. So Christine Yoder, many of you may know her. She is one of our volunteers at the front desk, and started volunteering right after her daughter passed. I'm sure you all know about Caitlin. And she had made a contribution to the fund to Thrive. And we reached out to her and asked if she wanted to establish something that could serve families long term. And so she thought that this would be a great opportunity to establish a fund that would last forever and give back so we can remember Caitlin's memory. And so we have established this trust through the Peninsula Community Foundation. Christine has invited friends and family members and members of the community to contribute to the fund. And so far it's raised about $86,000, and we will take a portion of that, those funds every year out and use it to provide emergency financial assistance to families who specifically have struggled due to medical concerns. You know, it is extremely common. I think it's 20 to 30%. I think it's 30% of families who come to us for financial assistance name a medical reason. It's usually they're sick, they've had surgery, they've had childbirth, and all of these things weigh into their loss of time at work, and it's created the hardship. And so these funds are going to be dedicated towards helping families who've gone through medical hardship that has directly influenced their financial situation. And we hope that this fund is going to create stability for families for generations. Thanks for asking. Anyone else want to ask a question? Okay. You don't right now. I'd love to do that. I haven't figured out how exactly. So when families apply for financial assistance, we have caseworkers who will send them things like job fairs coming up and the folks who do the things. And so we're making a warm handoff to them, but we're not taking action beyond that at this time. But I'd love to do it. I'd love to really have like a headhunter on staff who would just, you know, work with people. But there is currently a lot of workforce development programs right now, so we do tell them about them. Something I send to Pat every year and anyone else who's on the our list for this church is we send out a resource guide every year. So our resource guide is a 90-page Word document. I send it to you as a PDF. With lists of all the resources in the area. So it's lists of temp agencies, workforce development programs, clothing closets, childcare resources, places to get diapers. All of those things are listed in this guide. And the idea is that if someone calls Pat on Tuesday morning and says, I need help with diapers, she doesn't have to, you know, make up an answer, or not that she would, but she can look at the guide and then tell them specifically where to go. And so we do have that resource guide in all of our financial coaching rooms. We keep it up at the front desk. So when someone calls for something we don't offer, we can tell them exactly where to go. I update this guide, send it out every year. And so I'm hopeful that we're at least telling people where to go, and I hope that they are following up. Yes. Yeah. So we have three full-time staff and four part-time staff. That's it. We have 100 volunteers that come in weekly, and every year they clock in twice as many hours as our paid staff, because the staff really sit back and organize the volunteers. We're focused on recruiting volunteers, you know, applying for grants, making sure that there's training in place for our volunteers. And then the volunteers are the ones that are answering the phone, packing the grocery bags, doing the food delivery, which I didn't mention. DoorDash does delivery, but we also have our own cohort of volunteers who deliver food as well. They do data entry, they do our financial coaches. And so that's kind of our bread and butter. Yeah, good question. Anyone else? Cool. Well, thank you all so much. I really appreciate it. And I'll be here if you have any questions.